The views and comments expressed on the Space Show by its guests, callers, and listeners belong to them. The Space Show and its hosts serve only as a platform and are not responsible for others' comments or views. All topics discussed on the Space Show are primarily for educational purposes.
We choose to go to the moon in this decade and do the other thing.
We have made it to start.
3, 2, 1.
It's the Space Show with Dr. David Livingston. Broadcasting from 7 continents, consistently bringing you quality news and interviews with the best and brightest minds in the new space economy. Here is the founder and host of the Space Show, the man who best articulates the vision of space commercial enterprise, Dr. David Livingston.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the Friday morning California Time Space Show program, and I'm your host, David Livingston. Thank you very much for tuning in. We have another great show with one of our favorite guests today, Dr. Madhu Thangavelu from the University of Southern California. More about that in just a minute. We're planning a 60-minute program, but if we go over, we will gladly go over. If you do want to get a call in or an email in, do watch the clock. But as long as Madhu's cell phone continues to work, we will extend the program. 1-866-687-7223 is our call-in number. And our email, drspace@thespaceshow.com. And we are a talk show, so as you all hear me always say, we clearly prefer talking rather than email. So use our toll-free number. And Madhu would like that, too. He's waiting to talk to you. 1-866-687-7223. A couple of other quick things. The newsletter for the week is up, but it will change and be modified on Sunday. That's when the new one appears. But you will see all of the programs scheduled on the website newsletter, and then if you scroll down, you'll see what we have booked through, I guess, the end of September. And we're almost finished with July. I think June is finished. So we're moving right along. And can anybody out there really believe that this year is just about half over? I mean, I find that almost beyond belief. It's moved really fast. It's been a strange year, to say the least. We do have the website newsletter that I just mentioned, so do check it. And if you want the email version of the newsletter, make sure I have your email address. It goes out at 6 a.m. Monday morning California time, and I'd be happy to add you to the list. It's very, very short, won't clutter up your email box. Remember, we archive everything we do on our website, thespaceshow.com. Quickly download these programs. They're small file sizes. And you can also listen right off of our website. Even if you have any questions, you can always reach me at drspace@thespaceshow.com. We do have our store. Remember, you get there by clicking on any of the pictures of Pepper listening to The Space Show, and she will guide you to our Cafe Press store for Space Show logo wear. There's a Listen Live button, upper left menu. This tells you how to listen to live programs like we're doing right now. Also podcast, and we're on all platforms and all of the major podcast clients. And we're trying to get on a couple of others. But if you have one you'd like to see the Space Show on, email me, and we'll see if we can put it together for you. Sometimes it's a little bit hard to do, like Stitcher. We're still wrestling with what their requirements are, but hopefully we can get that resolved. And then, of course, above everything, the Space Show is a nonprofit 501c3 listener-supported program, meaning you, the listener, keep us on the air with your contributions. We certainly appreciate that. As a 501c3, remember, you do get a tax deduction for your gift if you're a federal taxpayer. The same is true if you're a California taxpayer. If you have any questions about the tax status, the 501c3 status as a nonprofit, visit our parent site, onegiantleapfoundation.org, or simply email me at drspace@thespaceshow.com. couple of other quick things. There's a big PayPal button at the top of all of our Space Show pages for your individual contributions made easy. This is the easiest way to support us. We thank you very much for supporting us as well, especially those of you that are supporting us through these very strange economic and health times due to the COVID-19 virus. In addition, we do offer sponsorships, and we have a few remaining for 2020, but the sponsors get the banner ad going across our homepage. You can change that banner as often as you like. And on the longer formatted shows, I read a sponsor message, usually during the break between first and second segments. But on the shorter programs like today, I shout out to our great sponsors. We don't read their messages so we can save time for our guests to talk. But we're certainly appreciative of Northrop Grumman, the Space Foundation, Astrox, AIAA, Moonwards, Celestis, the National Space Society, and the Space Plan, with the Integrated Space Plan. Click on their banners from time to time to see what's underneath their promotional messages. And again, we would not be doing the show without their great support, and we appreciate that. If you're interested in being a sponsor, let me know. Remember, your messages are part of our archive history, so your brand imprint, or whatever your message is for sponsorship, stays, I guess, forever. So it's a really, really cost-effective way to have, for the most part, perpetual promotion of your brand and your message. So again, if you're interested, contact me at drspace@thespaceshow.com. Well, as I said a few minutes ago, Dr. Madhu Thangavelu of USC is back with us as a guest today. And we're going to stray a little bit on different kinds of topics, not just his class, which is ASTE 527, a graduate space exploration architecture's concept synthesis studio in the Department of Astronautical Engineering at USC. We talk to him all the time about his class and some of the student projects. You can read about him on the website. His bio is there. He's a big participant in ISDC, by the way. He usually chairs or co-chairs the Moon Track. He may have some information about that for ISDC 2021, which I understand is in Los Angeles. We'll ask him for an ISDC 2021 update, if one is available already. I don't know if one is available yet or not. Madhu, welcome back to the Space Show. How are you today?
Doing good. Thank you, David. Am I coming through clear?
No, but you're okay. Listeners, he's on a cell phone, so that's but you're probably as clear as you're going to be on your cell phone.
We should
force the head of Verizon to listen to your cell phone, and maybe that would shake him up a little bit. So
yeah, well, let us hope all the providers get together and make our discussion easy to listen to, David.
Good luck on that one, Madhu. Good luck on that one.
Okay.
Were you watching to see SpaceX launch the other day and then get delayed because of weather?
Oh, absolutely. How much more exciting can this get, David, to be able to watch in very good definition? I mean, there were cameras all over the place and positioned so nicely you could really, you know, if you go through that sequence of activities, we would all become very good support staff for Elon's SpaceX mission.
It was quite a production show, and you're right, lots of cameras, lots of interesting angles. I'm assuming it'll be comparable on Saturday or Sunday when he launches on one of those two dates, hopefully. Do you have any comments about the flight, Dragon, their competition?
Oh, well, let me first talk about the SpaceX facilities and the missions. I think they are way ahead of any competition including the established purveyors of human space flight. And I think this is a very important development, Dave, globally, to see a small private space enterprise that which we did not even think would succeed, even by Elon Musk's own statement. You know, he did not expect SpaceX to get this far in such a short time. And kudos to people who push the envelope. I always like to think that these are the things that the government should be doing because it is so risky. And then to see a lone soul push this ahead, and he clearly mentions, you know, Elon mentions he does this because he wants humanity to move forward. And I think, who was it? It's Margaret Mead, I think, who said that, you know, it is individuals who push us to new developments and new horizons, and you cannot count on large organizations to do that for us. But I wish it was the other way around. So that's how I feel about it. That, you know, democratization. I think it's Peter Diamandis who loves to say this. Does he come on sometimes, David?
He hasn't been on in a long time, nor has Gwen. I would like to get them both back on, but it's been really hard to schedule them for the space show. But we'll keep trying. But Elon hasn't been on for several years.
Oh, you know, it's high time to get him back on there. And you know, I think it's Peter who says that, you know, democratization using technology is the way to go, and it's happening at such a fast pace that's hard to keep up, you know. And it's a good thing for human space flight, in my opinion. So that's where we stand at. You know, I applaud Jeff Bezos, Blue Origin, and there are other players in the game who are also interested in low Earth, economic access to Earth orbit. All these are very, very fundamental, because I think the other person you want in there is Rand Simberg. Does he come on sometimes?
Yeah, Rand is frequently a guest.
Yeah, you know, I was talking to him, and he said, the game now starts not on the surface of the Earth, but in low Earth orbit. And we'll come back to that later in the discussion, I hope.
What do you think of Boeing and their chances for getting the CST-100 going, which is also supposed to take American astronauts to the space station?
Well, as you all heard, that they had some difficulties in the operational segment of the capsule once it was injected into orbit, and then they had to scramble to fix that. But I have great faith in Boeing. It's a storied company. We all support Boeing. They're going through some difficult times, not only in the spacecraft technologies arena, but also mostly in their commercial effort to make aircraft more available, actually, to the world community. And in that, they're going through some growth pains. I can't comment more, but we all support these storied organizations like Boeing and Northrop and Lockheed. You know, there's so much history in these companies, David, that when people mock them, it doesn't seem right, because they've done so many things right. I mean, so many things have happened just like magic, but with everything else, the older companies get, I think we talked about the governor too, I think, things go awry. They're out of control. And we have to find a formula for this. I've had several people tell me in big organizations that the way they rejuvenate themselves is to shut themselves off and start elsewhere. But that may be a drastic measure. But, you know, if you look at our government ourselves, every 4 years we clean house or we think we're going to do better. But it takes less than four to mess up. Such is life.
Your thoughts on the government launcher and capsule, Orion and SLS, to actually get into production and start to contribute to this new space movement? How do you see SLS and Orion?
Well, thank you for asking, because, you know, I've been saying this to a very small group, but this may be a good place to say it. Anybody, this goes to a government, private, or any visionary thinking in the back of their minds, anybody who is thinking expendable rockets is still in the 20th century, David. And if you're not doing reusable, I would recommend they really, really rethink this, because I've seen several analyses come out, almost all of them fake, from agencies saying that we must still support expendable vehicles. Now, I cannot see, if I post this to a high school student and put the numbers down, they will tell you they have no idea what why expendables are still around. And this goes all the way from the biggest launch vehicles you can imagine, including SLS, unless and until they provide us a method for reusability, they are still thinking in the 20th century. And, you know, this is the reason why Elon Musk is blazing ahead with a profitable business, because you use your rockets again. They are like more and more, they're becoming more and more like aircraft, which is the way it should be. And I think NASA should get on board. I don't know, but if there are people within the agency looking at the capability of a larger vehicle like the SLS to be reusable, there are several shortcomings for doing that. But unless we get on board and follow the leaders in this. Technology, you're going to go the way of the dodo. It's already happening. I think in Europe, they've been struggling to go beyond the Ariane 6 to see what the next generation of vehicles would be, but they are 10 years behind. So this is how competition plays well, I think, into the whole business of making access to orbit. These are things that Rick Tomlinson and others have been saying for years and years, and the man still has hair on his head, you know.
You have an email question that came in a minute or so ago from Todd in San Diego, and he says, Madhu, do you see the success of SpaceX and their capsule going to the ISS with astronauts being the end of SLS and Orion? Do you think that will finally be the straw that breaks the back and the project will get canceled?
Well, that is a hard one to say, because all of those kinds of issues are wrapped in policy or that predates many of us in the business. And and SLS is the legacy of NASA over a long period of time. Various agencies and constituencies are involved in such decision making. But somewhere somebody will at some point in time realize and switch over to 20th century, 21st century technologies to keep up with, if not keep up with the rest of the competition here in the U.S., I'm sure the world is also, world space agencies are also looking towards the next generation of launchers. And Elon, as you know, is one step ahead again. Because we talk about the tyranny of the space of the rocket equation, David. It's a very clean clean way that tells you if the bigger the rocket that you can wield, the more payload you can put into orbit. And in some sense, it's a straightforward equation that tells you larger rocket ships are the way to go. And hence, the Starship that Elon is proposing, and it's undergoing tests, which is another heuristic in engineering. PowerPoint charts can only get you so far. Computational fluid dynamics can only get you so far. Then you go out and test. And test till you break it. I think I mentioned this to you in earlier earlier talks, earlier interviews, that there was a term called pranging, David. Do you remember what I said about pranging?
P-R-A-N-G-I-N-G.
That is correct.
I don't remember the term.
Okay. Now, everybody in engineering needs to know this, and particularly in our area, in aeronautics and astronautics. At some point in time, designs become prototypes. They become touchy-feely things, real things. And then you get some very brave people like those two astronauts who are going up, you know, Bob Behnken and Doug Hurley. They are test pilots. And what they do is they get into these vehicles. As you know, DM2 is demonstration mission, so it's not considered a crew mission. They are test pilots in there, and they fly these things to really see what the vehicle behaves like. And if I remember right, I think it was Bill Haynes, test pilot Bill Haynes, who told me that the reason why we do this is because nothing in the mathematics or nothing in the engineering equations can tell you how a vehicle behaves unless you are in it and flying it. And he also told me that the way you fly it is called wait, watch, and respond. That is, you would push the vehicle to the limit, and then you start tinkering with it to see what it does when you do something to it. And over time, you get this fine vehicle. But in between that time and the start of it, you have a series of tests that you take the vehicle to the limit, preferably without people on board, and you crash it. And that is called pranging. And when you completely push it to the limit and you let it fail and find out why it failed, you become very cognizant about limitations of your architecture, of your vehicle, and then you design your operational regime around that. That is the way engineering is done. Even in civil engineering, I mean, the way we build the buildings, we go and then we add factor of safety to it, and then over time we have what we call a reliable, strong-boned architecture, a strong-boned system that can that can survive. So pranging is an important term that I think we should all pay attention to and perhaps practice, like Elon is doing now with the Starship. Are we where are we at? Number four, number five, number six.
Uh-huh.
We are blowing up stuff, but you know, it's part of the real engineering world.
Fascinating. Getting to the moon, you know, we, in addition to all the excitement for Crew Dragon and the demo flight, there's a moon program going on, and you ought to know that more than anybody because you do the moon track at ISDC, where a lot of this is talked about. But we have a landing. I guess it's still on the books for 2024. It may be open the door, touch the surface of the moon, and then get the hell out of Dodge. I'm not sure I qualify that as returning to the moon. But then 2028, you've got the Artemis project and the Artemis Accords. Policies are shaping up for lunar mining and resource utilization. How do you see our efforts to go to the moon and do so on the kind of timetable we have? I mean, usually these timetables slip a little bit, but in the 24-28 time frame, sort of, what do you think, Madhu? Are we going to make it back? Are we going to miss the deadline or maybe give up again?
Oh, God, I wish I could tell you, except that, in our way of thinking, we are optimists. We want these things to happen like yesterday, but it's taking time. And, my kudos to the agency and to the participants in this direct venture, which I think last year the vice president pushed through the National Space Council meetings. I think he mentioned that we should return quickly and no need to reinvent the wheel. You are familiar with the National Space Council's work to create the space policy directives,
right.
1 through 4. And I think there may be one or two more coming in, but hats off to Scott Pace and his team, who begins, and I think this is important for our audience to know, the space program, the culture around space activity, particularly human space activity, David, deals with values of the free world. And which means, I think President Kennedy articulated this even during the moonshot period in his first speech. He talks about free people should freely share the fruits of space activity. And it's not the way other nations do it, David. Much of it is hidden in secrecy and so on and so forth. We have that situation in the DOD, but that's for national security purposes. But the civilian space flight should be for all. And so the SPD, everybody needs to know about the space the policy directives of this current administration. And then we moved on from there to the vice president's idea we should accelerate the program to land people. Particularly a woman and a man by 2024. NASA had a request for information and then recently handed out awards to the human lander system, which I think is a very good initiative. I would have expected this to happen 2 or 3 years ago, but it takes a little time. Landers are not easy to build, David. And again, in our kind of business, the way we set timetables is to work backwards from assuming a date for a human landing. We will have to look at the number of missions we have to fly to test. To test the system, whether it's capable and reliable to put people on. Now, to give you a rough idea, Earth to orbit launch, Falcon mission, it took approximately 10 years to get where we are at, And you can imagine how long it should take using best engineering practices to build a new lander. So with that in mind, if you ask me, are we ready to fly, even though some of the people think they are ahead in the game, it will still take some years to get a brand new lander. So we have to see what prototypes fly and how they behave, and then we'll be able to judge whether 2024 is a viable option. Though I keep pushing, 2024 is not as exciting as 2022, which is the 50th anniversary of when humans left the moon. Now, I think I mentioned in an earlier talk that symbolism is important, Dave. The 50th year is not the 51st year or the 52nd year. The 50th year is half a century. People remember that. And so we should push very hard to return people to the moon. And that is why, we have been proposing heresy at USC, saying that there are ways to do this very quickly, rather than to look at how to support commerce and business for the builders. I think it was Buzz Aldrin at the IAC who mentioned, going back to the moon with people should really not be thought of in the business as usual method, handouts and so on. The whole nation should come together to make it happen and keep economics by the wayside for this particular mission. But once you do that, commerce is a follow-on. It should be easy to do. Now, in terms of this lunar landing proposal, David, have you seen there is a dichotomy between what the White House is asking and what the Human Lander Program is offering? Have you seen anything that tells you that the agency and all of us, all of the community, is asking for something, and the White House is asking for something else?
I don't know that I would put it that way. But what I would say, the people who listen to this show and that I meet at space conferences clearly have a different concept and expectation of returning to the moon than what seems to be the government policy.
Yeah, well, NASA, to be very, very succinct about it, the NASA programs are still supporting a Gateway mission along with a human landing. And it seems obvious to many of us, including some very, very harsh voices, that if you want to land on the moon, you don't have to put anything in lunar orbit. And you can execute the job even with existing capabilities. And we have known this for a long time. And that is how the USC's fall 2019 project took shape. I think we talked about it the last time.
Right.
The USC Maxim project. We decided that we don't have to reinvent the wheel. We don't need a new lander because we have had a lander. It's called the LEM. The Apollo lander was such a sturdy system. I'm sure the blueprints are somewhere in somebody's, it's accessible somewhere. And if we really pushed it hard, we could fly two people to the moon using existing hardware. No SLS needed, we could use the Falcon Heavy for cargo. We could use Russian and perhaps Chinese assets to get into orbit and fly people to lunar orbit. And, it is something to really think about if you wanted to execute this very quickly. We should be able to do that using NASA's connections to the world. You know, do you know that NASA has more than 130 or 140 memorandum of understandings with the various nations of the world, China, Russia, and so on? Can't even compete in those areas of international agreement with NASA, because though NASA is a very storied organization, there is tremendous mystique to that agency. And the only thing is, I sometimes worry we are resting on our laurels, and that is not a good thing, David. We should be doing magic every day.
listeners, let me remind you that our toll-free line is available, and we'd love to hear from you. Give us a call. Give Madhu a call. 1-866-687-7223. We know you have a lot to say, so let us hear from you. Email still works, but we do prefer the phone. Email drspace@thespaceshow.com. Madhu, there are these questions of the gateway and things like that, but there was a recent picking of winners for the human lunar lander. I'm not talking about the early or project smaller lunar lander, but there were three companies selected. We all know the three companies. One company that everybody thought would probably be selected was not selected. You may have your opinions on that. I'm talking about Boeing. There has been some blowback in Congress about the way that selection went down. Rightly or wrongly, I can't really say. There's blowback in Congress on just about everything, so it's kind of like calling Wolf all the time, and then when the Wolf is really there, nobody pays attention because they call Wolf all the time. So, but there has been blowback about that. How do you see the selection of the lunar lander companies and to have all this done through the private sector? And what do you make of Boeing not being there?
Oh, gosh, you're kind to get me on that hard seat. David, I'm not going to make any particular comment, but I think Boeing had a plan they were trying to evolve a system that did not have the complexity of what the national team offered. Now, do you remember what the national team led by Blue Origin had in mind?
I remember they have a pretty large, complex lunar lander. I don't remember all the specifics,
correct.
But it's far more complex than the other contestants.
That is correct. And, I can imagine why Blue Origin team would like to do that. But when you look at a stack like that, you already know they're playing to both the agency's wishes and to the current White House wishes. And sometimes in projects like these, it is a good idea to compromise and balance needs. But if I read the president's, the current administration's wishes, we should be on the moon ASAP. And we should not be bringing in too many team players and so on. Over time, I agree that the gateway is an important asset, only because it's part of the space policy directive that we build systems, vehicles, and operations not only for the moon, but also for Mars. And to me, it's been clear since the day SPD-1 came out that the only way to get going towards Mars is to develop a Mars transit vehicle, David. And the Gateway is really a test bed to design, build, and operate a Mars transit vehicle.
Wait a minute. Musk is going to Mars in Starship. So how can you say that the only way is a Mars transit vehicle? That's not what Musk is doing, and I wouldn't discount or dismiss Musk.
Thanks for throwing the monkey wrench in. The way you would support NASA's Gateway is to suggest that you put a vehicle somewhere not in Earth orbit, but beyond Earth orbit, and let it do the pranging to find out what systems fail in what we call deep space. In fact, even cislunar space is not deep space, but we like to call it that. And when you go into this near rectilinear halo orbit, that is a highly elliptical, nearly polar lunar orbit, you can say that, you know, we are experiencing space weather like we would in deep space, irradiation and so on, which matters to humans and animals alike. And we can really get hard data out by testing them. Now, Elon's plan is to refuel his Starship in Earth orbit, but we have to see how his prototypes fare. We have great confidence in the way he's pushing SpaceX to do this, it's an alternative. And one of the things that bothers me about the current human landing system is the site, David, of site of the landing. If you want to go quickly back to the moon, I would not recommend a polar landing for the human mission. And this comes across in our Maxim project as well. Because if you look at what is needed to get to the pole, there are some trajectories we have to negotiate to go into a lunar polar orbit. Before we get there, the exploratory missions that SLS is proposing is a good one, and is going to equatorial orbit to test the vehicle. The first thing that you do, the reason why Falcon 9 is sitting there today, keeping people on top, because they've nearly 400 missions on the various Falcons so far, and they know what. It is like, you know, the mission is like.
You have a caller waiting to talk to you, just letting you know.
Okay. So, we have to test these vehicles. So the first thing we would do is launch any vehicle that wants to go to the moon into our most secure orbit, which is equatorial, hoping that, you know, if there is a failure, particularly in a human mission, you can fly them back because you have what's called a free return trajectory, David. And so things like that matter at the end of the day when you're building up your transportation capability, reliability of the transportation system. And it's my thinking that the poles, lunar poles, are great for robots to work and so on, to do things, you know, clipped missions. They're looking towards, gaining more characterization of the lunar terrain at the poles. That's a great idea. No people involved. But getting people to the equatorial orbit and landing them around the equator and bringing them back would be, in my opinion, the best engineering practice to get the transportation system going.
All right, let's take your caller, okay?
Okay.
Hi, caller. Welcome to the program today. Who are you and where are you?
This is Dallas Beanhoff, David. I'm in Virginia.
Hi.
How are you?
Dallas. You staying well and healthy?
We are, thank you. And I assume you are, and Madhu is. Hi, Madhu.
Hello, Dallas. It's been a while. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. First, a comment on the trajectories. You know, you're talking about going to the polls. Any system that is built by any of these contractors will likely have a test mission that would maybe do the circumlunar with a free return, as you suggest. Maybe go into a lunar orbit without going into NRHO. But eventually, the mission before the landing probably will enter NRHO and then do the landing. And, you know, Doug Levaro was talking about the steps that were taken at Apollo to retire each as much risk as one could before doing the landing. And that's likely what will happen in the scenario ahead of us. But going back to David's question about the selection and what NASA got or bought versus didn't buy. You know, the national team solution matches almost exactly the NASA reference architecture. So there's a top level reason why one might select it. The Dynetics solution offers a close to the surface human module that eliminates the risk, if it's a risk, of walking down a ladder, climbing down a ladder, or using an elevator to get to the surface. It's a reusable lander in that you don't leave major assets on the surface, but it does throw away drop tanks on the way down. It also is very close to the NASA reference architecture. SpaceX, on the other hand, is a radically different, radically increased performance for less money invested by NASA than the other two combined. Why not choose it?
Good thoughts, Dallas. Keep going. There's one more.
There's one more. And as for Boeing, about February or so, Administrator Bridenstine had made a comment that they would not, NASA would not pay for an element that benefited one of the bidders. One of the bidders, Boeing, needed the exploration upper stage, that is the larger cryogenic stage on SLS, in order for it to work. Now, I read the source selection statement. They did not talk about why they didn't select Boeing, other than it failed the first hurdle to be considered for a contract. That's about all they said. But my presumption is that they didn't select it because of that exploration upper stage requirement. So
these are,
you had a comment.
Thank you, Dallas, for informing the audience the whole story here. Perhaps there were some more policy implications, but Dallas pretty much laid it out right. Great. Thank you. And while Dallas is online, let me ask him, David, with your permission, what is your opinion on a 2024 landing? Is it viable with any of these participants? Let's put Boeing back into the picture as well and ask the question, can you execute a human landing of two people in the 2024 time frame? And also your opinion on a polar landing versus an equatorial landing for people?
Well, it's not two people, it's four people. The landers, I mean, the landers are to put four people down.
That's right.
As I understood. And going to the pole versus going equatorial, to me, is no greater risk of landing. The risk is in the mission duration requirements and the operational constraints of coming back home, because the NRHO orbit is a 7-day orbit. But that's not really
right.
a risk. That's a
that's
time
right.
thing.
And, I think I would draw a human mission, I think you quickly slipped in the term returning them, particularly during an abort mission.
I would go to the poles. I would go to one of the poles, doesn't matter which one. That's where the future of a sustainable activity on the moon resides, in my opinion. Getting there by 2024 is problematic for all four companies we're talking about.
That is exactly right.
And it was illustrated or discussed in the source selection statement. Blue Origin
right.
has unproven propulsion and energy system. They are testing their BE-7. Dynetics has an unproven propulsion system. And SpaceX has an unproven propulsion system and a unique approach.
Yeah,
had risks, and the risk for Boeing was the exploration upper stage.
All of those
are problems to getting to 2024 if there are any issues in the vehicle development timeline. But, if you don't have a goal, you're not going to try to reach it.
This is true. And, it's a very hard problem to do any of those missions shown in the bid and the competition to hold on to that timeline. Dallas, did you have any thought how we might execute a 2024 human landing with two people? Forget the four. It makes a difference.
You know, it doesn't matter two or four. The systems need the same capabilities in terms of functions. It's a matter of size. So the same issues occur. The same issues are still there for two people versus four people with the solutions chosen.
Let me tell you where I differ from all the national policy and the NASA policy and the immediate rush to want to get down to the pole to provide to look for fuel to build up fuel reservoirs.
That's not the reason for the 2024 landing.
That is correct. That is exactly right.
The reason for the 2024 landing is for this administration, if it continues into the next period, into the next term, has an accomplishment. It's a political goal.
That is correct. And if we are to keep to that that timeline, Dallas, do you see any way we can do this?
Well, with unlimited funding, anything's possible, short of breaking physics. And two of the providers have what I would call unlimited funding. One has more unlimited than the other, if that's possible. The third one, Dynetics, I don't know their ability to keep funding, but Blue Origin got the most money. Dynetics got the second amount, and SpaceX got the least amount. But that's immaterial as to how much it's going to cost them or what they're going to have to spend.
Yeah, the way Dynetics operates, I believe, is through their various various Department of Defense contracts. Dallas.
They have 25 subcontractors. I don't know if they're requiring them all to contribute.
Yeah.
I have no idea.
But
I would say two of them have a strong case of being able to spend what it takes to get it done, if it can be done.
Yeah, well, it's a very, very interesting time, and, you know, our job, particularly in the talk show, is to push the system, and I think we have to lay it open to the audience to appreciate what are the various possibilities.
Yeah, SpaceX is about to fly their Starship prototype to 150-meter altitude, I think, coming up.
Yeah, they're getting ready.
Very soon. They did a static firing yesterday.
Yeah.
I was going to ask, do either of you think that this return to the moon program will continue into a new administration, or will we watch, once again, these space plans get trashed for the space plans of the new administration?
Thank you for asking. I think there was an article in the Atlantic or elsewhere about what would happen if we had a change of administration. To my thinking, if you look at the past, if the past is anything that informs the future, we can expect going back to the drawing board. And if I remember our able administrator who mentioned that this is not Lucy and the football anymore, not quite sure what it means. But
Dallas, do you think it can survive an administration change?
If Congress is consistent with its recent history, then it can survive, unless the next term president does the same thing that Obama did after Bush and Trump did after Obama. But Trump did less after Obama than Obama did after Bush.
Right.
And so I think there's a strong probability of continuing. Strong, maybe 75%. You know, it depends on Biden's, if Biden is elected, if Biden remains the candidate or becomes the candidate. If he has a strong desire to continue the Obama change of direction, you know, if Congress has their say, currently I would say it would continue. But Congress doesn't set NASA's policy. Congress funds what the president asks them to do.
And if you, and NASA, if you remember,
set their own direction.
Yeah.
And if you remember, Dallas, the way Congress reacted to the president's administration's wishes, it was pretty much against it doing much on the moon anyways and proceeding towards Mars. Specifically in terms of the human lander competition, immediately thereafter, the advisory council looked at the various landing options, and I think as Dallas mentioned, advisory council agreed that there's not a chance that any of these proposals would touch the lunar touchdown on the lunar surface by 2024. So there are many, many things to put into the
There are members of Congress who believe that NASA should not be going down the public-private partnership path, but should be buying systems and operating systems for the moon. So, you know, there's that faction as well. So, but still, I think there's a strong probability of continuing in the next administration, independent of who that might be.
Yeah, I would weigh in against Dallas on this one. I would say that if there is an administration change, welcome to Welcome to some new directions in NASA policy.
All the past administrations have put a 10-year delay in our next achievement.
Achievement.
You know?
Well, you know, I think when you've been in this business long enough, Dallas, we appreciate how slow things happen, and but as long as it's in the forward direction, we should all applaud. And
which is why we need to get out of the public direction and more into the private. Should there be money to be made?
Yeah, this is true too, and it will happen. And you know, that is why I think this all brouhaha about resources came about.
And I think SpaceX and Blue Origin are going to continue down the path they're on, independent of what Congress decides.
Oh, that is correct. And you know, we should applaud them for it. Because if you look around the world, you don't see that kind of activity anyplace else. And right. I think our own national security depends on these kinds of activities. We not only talk about things like the Artemis Accords and so on. I'm a firm believer that, you know, the free world has to take charge in matters like this, because otherwise a gauntlet will come on, just like the Iron Curtain fell over Russia some years ago, and impede any kind of human progress in these matters.
We all
grew up in thinking about the free world and the values that we cherish. We would not want to hand them over to any kind of authoritarian means that we see today. Just looking at the COVID condition that we are all in, you can see how different nations react and how they put out their latest, most transparent reports on on this terrible thing that's happening now. As somebody said, viruses don't think, viruses don't flock, viruses don't have policies, they just kill. And many of those are valuable lessons for our space community as well. Anyway, please continue, Dallas. It's so good to have you. Have you on. I'm sure you have some thoughts too.
Yeah, I think you mentioned about you don't see SpaceX or Blue Origin replicated in other countries around the world, and I think that's because our regulatory regime and our financial structures and all that are different here, and they're more amenable to those things happening rather than in other countries. I mean, there are some upper limits in Europe that preclude people from doing this. I mean, and I can't cite what they are, but I've heard of these hurdles that they have to go over if they want to get beyond a research stage into a commercial stage. I mean,
that is correct. And, I recall there was a report about in terms of startups and how it is very hard to Europe. I mean, which is also a free world nation, free world population of nations, many startups fail because of the hurdles that Dallas mentioned. You cannot move ahead beyond a certain level before government laws, regulations, and bureaucracy clamp down on you. And, these are things that separate our vision of our worldview from the rest of the world,
I'm gonna relinquish the line, David.
Okay. Thank you. Good to hear from you again, Dallas. Thank you for your call.
It's always good to listen to your shows. Have a great day.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Dallas, good stuff with you. Let us chat some more later. Bye.
Thanks.
Okay.
Listeners, Dallas has cleared the line. If you would like to call, there is still time, 866-687-7223. Madhu, what is your university, USC, doing about returning classes, some of the problems we hear about on the news facing schools and universities all the time. How is USC handling some of these problems?
Let me get to that momentarily, but let me close up our Lunar discussion a little bit more. David, let me tell you what we think we should be doing to support particularly the space policy directives 1 through 4 and the lunar resources discussion and so on. I think if we want to do a maximum impact mission, we should not be hoping to send people to the polar regions as part of our first missions. We should send them to a specific area where we've been before, particularly because there is much exploration that can be done, and that specific area is the Sea of Tranquility, where the first humans set foot on the lunar surface. Now, if you look at the recommendations of the Artemis Accords document that I'm sure all your audience would love to read, you will see that they talk about a few things that I think you had Michelle Hanlon talk in your show before. She's a fantastic person who suggests that we should take care of the artifacts that we left on the lunar surface. So combining all of that together, plus the fact that Mare Tranquillitatis has lunar subsurface caverns and cavities. We call them pits. Some of them think they are part of the lava tubes that exist there. I think a mission that combines extreme levels of public involvement and scientific exploration can be conducted in that area, the Mare Tranquillitatis area. There are some papers out in that regard. And, you know, the most important thing, David, that nobody is mentioning is you go down to the pole and your lighting at the pole is very, very shallow. Now, I don't know if you have done this, but I continue to do this. You know, we have our baseball games for the kids later in the evenings, particularly the last season. And when you go out looking for stray balls that have gone beyond the field, if you try to find them during a shallow sunset, you are in deep voodoo because you can't see anything. And if you're thinking about exciting public by landing two people on the polar region in a very shallow sunlit angle, oh, it's going to be very, very disappointing, David. And this is why we prefer, in the MAXIM project that you may want to look over the slides, we prefer a 7-day full-on daylight mission on the lunar surface where the bright sunlight can give you incredible field of depth of what is going on during a mission on the surface, and the astronaut clarity, landscape clarity. And you can zoom in, and you can see detail throughout the mission, and that is why we prefer the MAXIM mission. I hope people go look over those slides, particularly the ending part where we talk about a surface traverse, David, where you get into a rover and roam from place to place, seeing the various landscapes, which you simply won't be able to do in the polar region. So this is why I kind of feel poles are for robots, You know, humans need to go to where there's bright light for most part, at least in the early parts of going back to the moon.
Okay.
So please recommend that, the Maxim Project, for everybody. Of course, the manuscript is in the works. We should have it at the next International Astronautical Congress, which is going to be, as all of you know, it's going to be a virtual congress. And then they will have another one in Dubai again in the next year, in 2021. So the 2020 IAC is going to be virtual. I think you know that, David. All right, good. Let's go.
So how is USC planning to open up and resume classes? What are you guys planning to do, given the shutdown, California education, and also L.A. is still shut down with some pretty extreme measures by your mayor? How do you know it's going to be opened up in time for ISDC 2021? There may not be a vaccine, and Mayor Garcetti may not open up Los Angeles.
You know, it is an ongoing discussion within the USC administration, the faculty, and students are all involved in studying the progress of COVID and what it has done, what amount of irreversible conditions have arrived. In many respects, COVID reminds us how space activity and human space activity in particular the things we do to keep ourselves away from each other, social distancing and so on, are things we would do if we were in a contaminant area. And we have a lot of expertise in this, how to keep people and the projects going in alien and contaminant infested arenas. We do that regularly in biological laboratories, to transfer it into the public health domain is something that may not agree with how humans collaborate, David. But astronauts do this all the time. So I recall sending an email that if we were 20 or 30 years ahead in human spaceflight programs, this COVID situation would not have been as difficult on us. Now, having said that, all of you need to know that USC still has a fantastic program in the astronautical engineering department. I think, did you have our astronaut professor talk on SpaceX yet, Garrett Reisman?
He's been on the show. Last year.
That's right. And Garrett is right now on site at KSC, cheering on and prepping up the Falcon 9 launch to ISS. So he had sent us a note to that effect. And so anyhow, with respect to USC and what is happening now, I think many of the difficulties will tide over by the fall, David. As you know, the effects of COVID-19 came upon us during the middle of the spring semester. USC, like many other schools, I'm sure, like all other schools, I'm sure, they switched from face-to-face meetings, classroom meetings, to online, and they did this with a dexterity that that was quite impressive. No less than 6,000 courses, David, were moved from classroom meetings to virtual meetings, David. And spectacular. It went out without a hitch, at least for me. In the spring, as you know, I teach in the School of Architecture. It is in the fall that I do the engineering, human spaceflight engineering program. So in the spring, we were in the middle of the space and city curriculum that I do there. And we switched over online. And the funniest part is that when I switched on online, I was able to get reviewers from all over the world, David. There were people dialing in from India and unearthly hours. There was participation from Europe, from Italy, from the UK. Then I had somebody from Italy dialing. I had a faculty reviewer from Australia. So you know, there are some positive things about conducting seminars and discussion groups over the internet, David. I wouldn't recommend Zoom to everybody, but there are things like Microsoft Teams. There are WebEx is more secure. USC runs a very strong distance education network over WebEx, and most of the courses in astronautical engineering can be taken over a distance education network. I think you may want to ask Professor Gruntman or Professor Irvin about this. You can graduate with a master's degree in astronautical engineering without coming to campus. And I suspect, David, that this is happening all over in different universities. And they are wondering what the capital expenses are going to be for maintaining campus infrastructure as they are. I know that labs and so on will still need to have physical equipment and work will have to continue with face-to-face meetings. But all these things are on the table, David, and of course, finances related to students coming on board, staying in dorm rooms and room and board, all those things will see some kind of changes. It's happening as we speak, so I cannot comment more, except that we are getting regular emails from administration on what the trajectory looks to be coming for 2020. And again, I can tell you that programs like ours in the astronautical engineering department within the Viterbi School of Engineering are adapting very, very fast to these changes. And I assure you that, you know, I've done online classes for 20 years. All the classes that we taught in my studio has been online because many students, they are working in various companies and cannot drive down to USC to attend. So the Astronautical Engineering Department provides for a remote student attendance and graduation. And again, I would refer this to Mike Gruntman, who can tell you more about the numbers that we have been graduating. Graduating is one thing, but more importantly, the numbers we have been finding accommodating within the industry. And it's a very hot area to be studying astronautical engineering and human spaceflight. I would recommend it to anybody who's excited about the future of human activities. And we are a very interdisciplinary community, David. As you know, all you need to do is look at your audience and look at the list of interviews you do. And you know that space activity is interdisciplinary. So we expect a good fall for the university, and I hope the rest of our educational system also follows all over the U.S.
What about ISDC 2021 in Los Angeles? Do you think you're going to be able to do it in Los Angeles?
Oh, absolutely, and thank you for asking. You know, I'm the co-chair for the whole conference this time, so that tells you that the moon is in everybody's sights, and we hope to have a very big gathering. I surely hope that the COVID situation would have ebbed by end of May, I think it's when.
Who is the co-chair of ISDC? Who is the main chair of ISDC?
This time, it is Greg Autry and I. We are co-chairing.
So Greg was part of it last year, too.
Yes, indeed. And David, you were there. You saw a very, very interesting gathering. ISDC is unlike any other professional meeting because it's one of those conferences that is really more like a festival of sorts. We bring in people from all over with all inclinations with one vision, that is the ascendance of humanity into space and to occupy space, not only to go forward, but also to cherish human civilization and human endeavors on Earth. If you look at Elon Musk and Jeff Bezos, they offer different angles of the same philosophy. One which ensures Elon, who ensures us we got to populate the universe with our species, and Bezos, who looks back at Earth and says we have to beautify and keep our environments where we live when we live. Where we live in a very good condition. And I think space activity does both, don't you think, David?
I do think so. And I think the demand is still there for it, as well as the excitement. I don't think the economic problems and the shutdowns and all of what's happening have dampened much of the space enthusiasm, for sure.
Did you happen to watch that episodes on For All Mankind on Apple TV, David? Did you see that, or did you hear about it?
I heard about it. I don't get Apple. I don't have Apple TV, so I did not see the episodes.
Okay, well, we zoomed in on it, and we were glued to it, the whole family, because without telling you any of the gist of it, it really is about what would have happened in the 60s if the Russians had landed on the moon first and we had Apollo going at the same time, whether it would have fired up our program even more. And if Apollo had continued beyond Apollo 17 with later missions, what we would have achieved on the lunar surface. And it's quite a dramatic event, and particularly when you see real hardware displayed against real people, and you have a sense of having already been to the moon, I think it makes for potent storytelling, David, and all of us were glued to it. I would recommend this to to everybody. I think you can even watch it on the free promotion to look over those episodes. I would strongly recommend it, David.
We're getting close to a 90-minute program. Have we left anything out that you wanted to talk about? Do you have any concluding comments?
I think there is an organization that many of you may not know about, and it is called the Moon Village Association, David. and it's a youthful, it's a young organization, and they are doing some fantastic work in bringing the entire global community into the picture with a focus on the moon and lunar activities. I've been engaged with them for since the beginning, and they host some very fine discussions, and have been feeding policy information and exchanging current discussions on a global scale with regard to the moon. They are a bunch of seasoned engineers and scientists from all over the world, and the membership is growing. I would recommend that all of you look up the website of the Moon Village Association.
Who runs it, Madhu? Who is in charge of it?
Well, if you look at the board of directors, you'll see Americans, you'll see Europeans, you'll see Chinese, you'll see Russian, you'll see Japanese. In fact, their last workshop happened in Japan, and it attracted the private space sector, the U.S. private space sector leaders were there talking about visions, Blue Origin, SpaceX. All of them had data and information and presentations to do about what they think is the future of human spaceflight, specifically for the moon. And in many conferences, you don't see that level of participation at that leadership level of participation. But the Moon Village Association has been doing some spectacular things, David. So along with the National Space Society that we all love and cherish, the Moon Village Association will also be hosting some meetings this year virtually. Of course, ISDC 2022, David, has some plans for some spectacular virtual assemblies in 2020. And you'll be hearing about that. So the Moon Village Association will be doing that too, virtually this year. We were supposed to meet in Cyprus this year, but because of what's going on, it'll be a virtual meeting this year and next year in Cyprus. So I want you all to know about that. And, I like to think that because of what is happening, we are able to bring in people, without the difficulties of transportation and room and board and so on, and still engage in forward-looking ideas for all of humanity, David. You know, one of the things that the Artemis Accords puts down that all of you should read if you haven't is that once you get into low Earth orbit or beyond, you don't have to think about the overview effect to know who is in charge. If things go wrong, David, Mother Earth will bring you back to Earth, but no assurance she will bring you back to where you lodged from. And this is true once you get out into out beyond Earth. It again reflects on this, David, that once you become a space-faring society, it is not anymore about us versus them, or this policy versus that, and one philosophy of life versus another. You are at the mercy of the whole globe. You will be asked at very short notice things like please excuse us, but we have an emergency. We are bringing down our most bravest and smartest people in your territory, and no hostilities meant. So, we are pushing our species towards a new kind of thinking and refinement, David, in space flight, particularly human space flight. And it's a welcome thing because that is how humanity progresses, not with sticks and stones. And now it is more or less that you may have heard that lasers are considered the best way of killing. So we are moving ahead beyond that kind of thinking toward a prosperous future for all. And that is, did you have something to mention?
No, it would be nice to realize that. We'll see how it unfolds in the coming months and years.
I know, because, when I look at my own evolution over a period of time, I got into...
Hello? Madhu, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Yeah, you cut out. I lost what you were saying.
Okay, when I look at space activity over the years, David, first, it excited us because it's a cool thing to do. A lot of people come into space because it's a cool thing to do. And then as we progress and become more involved in the various machinations of the industry, you start to think more in terms of technologies and how all the technologies come into play. And then you become more involved in the policy of how these things are done. And then the policy emerges from national policies to international policies and humanitarian views of things. And before you know it, you're totally immersed in a view of the world, which is unlike many other endeavors that people engage in. It opens your mind up, and, your friends become friends from all over the world. Look at the Moon Village Association, and look at the advisors in there, and you go like, wait a minute, I thought we were fighting with all these people. Not really. At the highest echelons, everybody has their hands together. And, we are all the parts of the same species, David, and have the same longings, the same feelings towards humans and the biosphere. The biosphere is a big area of import for space activity because it tells you how fragile we are as a species and how we cannot be what we are without the support of the biosphere and the ecosphere.
Well,
so all these things make us whole.
Well, maybe you'll get some good commentary from the archive listeners on the blog with your closing comments. I hope so. Madhu, you need to stay well and safe, and hopefully we'll talk to you back when school is starting and see how you're doing.
And you do.
We'll see where we are with Artemis and how it's really developing and what's going to happen. So I think we'll know more about all of that later in this year.
Oh, absolutely. There will be a lot of action between now and November, David. You know that, right?
Absolutely, for sure. Thank you for being on the show. I'll get the archives to you as soon as possible. And as I said, stay healthy and well in Los Angeles. That could be the name of a movie. And we will maybe see you someday on the moon.
Thank you.
Wouldn't that
thank
be nice?
Thank you, David. Thank you, David. Always a pleasure to talk to you.
And definitely at ISDC, and that I guess will be in May of 2021, right?
That is true, and we'll have a fantastic program in Los Angeles. It attracts a lot of people. Usually, ISDC in Los Angeles has the maximum gathering because we have so much of the space community here, and plus people come to Los Angeles because, you know, it's a hot spot for tourism as well. So
and it's at the Sheraton near the airport, correct?
That is right. That's okay. Where we are planning to do that.
Okay. Yeah. Keep me posted on that, and we'll probably do some programming on that later in the year, too. Thank you.
Thank you, David.
Enjoy the summer and stay safe. Listeners, thank you for emails, and Dallas for your phone call. Back again on Sunday. Good luck to SpaceX tomorrow or Sunday. We'll all be watching. That is at 12:22 California time in the afternoon tomorrow. If you're on the East Coast, that's going to be at 3:22. And then on Sunday, if they have to launch, it's at noon California time and 3 p.m. on the East Coast. We have a great guest on Sunday. If this thing gets postponed, I may see if Dr. Lau from Stanford will delay her interview by 30 minutes. But hopefully we'll go on Saturday and we won't need to do that. Again, everybody have a great, safe weekend coming up. Thank you to Madhu. Goodbye from Madhu, David, and the Space Show.